Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 1st, 2016. We'll begin today with an article on the front page that is in the area of education. Headline is Kids Endangered by School Zone Speeders, and this was written by Valerie Wells. Wearing a reflective vest, carrying a handheld stop sign, and using a loud whistle, Jonathan Tisch steps out into Fairview Avenue at Wood Street to stop traffic so Dennis School students can cross. The problem is not everyone stops. With four children clustered around him, Tisch freezes and holds the kids back with his free arm as a pickup truck speeds by without slowing. Quote, I've been told by one of my former third grade teachers, and she said she considers it one of the more dangerous corners, Tisch said. They get into the school zone doing 30 or 35 miles an hour, and half of them don't even slow down, end quote. Illinois law regarding school zones places a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit on school days when children are present. One of the problems at Tisch's corner is that the crosswalk paint has long since faded away, and there is no school zone sign with a flashing light, even though several children cross there. There are signs at the corner of West Main and Fairview, and flashing signs around nearby Millikan University, Tisch said. Quote, it's labeled, but it's not labeled real well, he said. During the mornings, I stay up here until about 8:30, because they have a gym class that comes by on the way to the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. That's usually 10 to 15 people. I wait until they get across, and I usually have some late ones who try to run across. People will literally drive around me and go straight through. At French Academy, signs placed in the grass along Wood Street read, "We only cross at corners." Reminders to parents picking up students and kids who might be in a hurry to get to the parents' car to be safe. Quote, parents will park in the funeral home parking lot and then call for their children to cross in the middle of Wood Street, said Principal Julie Fain. Quote, we have witnessed kids almost get hit, which is why we mandate students to cross at the corners if their parent does not come over and walk them across the street. By the time the crossing guard turns on the flashing light at Mound Road and Neely Avenue near Stevenson School, Principal Renee Burdick is already inside the building. Quote, people don't watch like they should, she said. About 20 students walk to Stevenson from the apartments east of the school on Mound. Parents are careful to watch out for kids walking, but people driving by on Mound don't always slow down and may not realize it's a school crossing, even with the crossing guard and the flashing light. Most children get to school on the bus or are driven by parents nowadays, but some of Decatur's schools still have plenty of kids walking back and forth, such as Dennis, Stevenson, and Harris, which largely serve as neighborhood schools. At one time, crossing guards were supplied by the city of Decatur, but now they work for the school district. Not every building has or needs one. Some schools have no students who walk. Even when students ride the bus, motorists often disobey the flashing lights and stop sign, said Maria Robertson, director of community engagement for Decatur Schools. We had, this is a quote, we had 3 bus fender benders this week. The photos that accompany this article show 3 of these crossings. In one, crossing guard Jonathan Tisch blows his whistle as a motorist drives through while Tisch assists Dennis School students crossing at the intersection of Wood Street and Fairview Avenue. Mr. Tisch is out in the road and a car is going right by him, even though it's holding up a stop sign. Another picture shows the signs posted along Wood Street in front of French Academy as among safety measures for student pedestrians at the school. And those signs we read, "We only cross at corners," and has drawings of 2 little children there. Third photo shows substitute crossing guard Julie DeLabre, who is stopping traffic while assisting Harris School students crossing Martin Luther King Jr. Road. One child is crossing and he's warily watching the 3 automobiles that are stopped in this photograph. We'll turn now to page 3 for more articles of local interest. The headline on this is "County to Consider Cupcake Law," and this was written by Ryan Voiles. A plan to allow home bakeries within Macon County is expected to be decided on next week. The ordinance, which has been referred to as the Cupcake Law, would allow all non-perishable baked goods to be made at home by bakers and sold directly to customers. Sales are limited to $1,000 per month, and no registration or permit from the county health department is required. The ordinance passed the county's Siting Rules and Ordinance Subcommittee at a meeting October 27th and is expected to be voted on by the full board on November 10th. If approved, the ordinance would only cover unincorporated parts of the county, as municipalities have the choice to allow home bakers within their boundaries. The Decatur City Council approved a home kitchen ordinance during a meeting in April. The county's law would have some differences from the city. As Assistant State's Attorney Michael Baggett said, the county lacks the home rule jurisdiction that allows for more restrictions, such as the city's requirement that the home bakers receive a food handler certification. The ordinance was discussed in county committee earlier this spring, but was not approved. Macon County Health Department officials urged board members to reject the plan. Quote, "One job of the health department is to ensure food safety for the public," Department Administrator Diana Heyer told the county subcommittee. Quote, "Promoting the sale of any uninspected food items creates an unacceptable risk of possibly increasing the number of foodborne illnesses associated with the consumption of unsafe food." Among the issues officials have is the department will have no jurisdiction to make sure home-baked products are labeled as such or to list allergens, and that it would be unfair to licensed bakers who spent money to get licensed and set up their operations. They are also concerned that they will not be able properly regulate against foodborne illnesses, as the department cannot inspect home bakeries unless there is a complaint filed. Heyer said they would work with interested home bakers towards getting licensed. but several supporters of the ordinance and board members cited it as a chance to allow residents to make a little extra money and to eliminate what could be seen as unnecessary government oversight. The government needs to stand back and let people live their lives without sticking their nose in everybody's business, end quote, said Howley Mowry, owner of Mowry Baking and Candy Company. The only photograph we have here is a plate of delicious-looking chocolate-frosted cupcakes sprinkled with little pieces of sugar. That's the only photo. The trick to teaching modern band and popular music, Powell said, is to provide as much instruction as necessary, but not too much. What is the minimum amount of instruction to still have success in this lesson? He said. While teaching kids music theory along with technique is important, making it fun is important too. He proved that by teaching a simple bass line that alone was boring and repetitive. But when he showed them that by playing it backwards and along with Led Zeppelin's Dazed and Confused, they were playing a song that all changed and heads bobbed in time all over the room. Quote, some might say you're just playing rock music, but all of a sudden it's totally cool, he said. Neil Smith, Associate Professor of Music Education at Millikan, has held rock band camps for kids and helped with pilot programs in some Decatur schools, such as Dennis, Johns Hill, and Holy Family. His hope, he said, was that the teachers who attended the workshop would start programs in their schools and the idea would spread. Quote, It kind of speaks for itself that we have a whole school district that has a professional development day, and they've chosen to be here to do this, to widen the door to music participation, Powell said. Quote, a lot of the teachers here might not identify as a guitar player or whatever, and we've given them an approach to show how they might include it in the classroom. But in addition to that, to get more students into school music, there are two photographs. The first shows Millikan University student Amy Frost playing on a keyboard application along with Decatur music teachers Nathan Seals, Middle, and Robert Lark during a segment of the Little Kids Rock workshop for music school teachers. Another shows Millikan student Alyssa Cantorek enjoying playing along with the class on her smartphone keyboard application. Some of the students wore Halloween costumes. This woman seems to be dressed as a pirate. The headline of the next article is Getting Through: Training Shows Teachers How to Navigate Poverty. This was written by Teresa Churchill. The trick was fitting 800 to 900 teachers and other professionals into the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel's Holiday Hall. The treat was learning from Bethany Tucker, a consultant with Highland, Texas-based AHA Process Incorporated, founded by nationally known educator Ruby Payne. Indeed, Bridges Out of Poverty, scheduled on a Halloween devoted to professional development for Decatur Public Schools, was Baby Talk founder Claudia Quigg's way of returning a favor the school district extended to Decatur in 2005 when it provided training in Payne's methods for reaching students living in poverty. Quote, Baby Talk, and Talk is all in capitals, is celebrating 30 years, Quake said. Our Early Head Start program offers this training as our birthday gift to our community. We hope this will be the start of many conversations about poverty. Those conversations actually began Monday as Tucker asked participants to discuss in small groups as she went through each of 10 actions they could take to succeed with children from different backgrounds. Among those actions are teaching students how to plan, how to ask questions, and the abstract processes they must understand to do the work. But first, Tucker said, they must be taught the hidden rules of school and how to speak the language of school and work. Quote, common sense knowledge does not equal intelligence, she said. When we have children and families walk into our campus behaving in ways that violate our expectations because their experiences have been different than ours, is it possible, if we're not very careful, we might sell them short? End quote. Tucker said a teacher should also learn what resources a student or family has and which ones are needed before deciding how to help. Quote, when my students didn't do well, I used to think they were just not trying, she said. Quigg also introduced Shauna Aja, who started work September 7th as her successor as executive director of Baby Talk. Referring to an invitation for conference participants to dress as superheroes, Aja praised teachers for their singular power to improve student achievement and their desire to overcome the educational barriers of poverty. Also represented in the audience Monday were the Decatur Family YMCA, Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, Macon County Court appointed special advocates, Macon County Health Department, Old Kings Orchard Community Center, Project Reed, and the United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois, among others. Deborah Baltimore, Compliance Coordinator for Baby Talk Early Head Start, came as Batgirl, complete with nail polish in the right shade of yellow. William Pritz, a history teacher at Stephen Decatur Middle School, sported a Pikachu stocking cap. Quote, it's important for us to all get together and talk about this, Baltimore said. And Pritz agreed. This is excellent, he said. A photograph shows Matt Andrews, principal at Dennis School, among the 800 attendees at a Bridges Out of Poverty conference led by Bethany Tucker Monday. And Ms. Tucker is also pictured wearing a bright red smock and holding a microphone. The room is set up with banquet-style tables, and it is completely filled with individuals who look very seriously interested. We'll turn now to our advice columnists. Here are the letters to Jean Phillips for today. Dear Abby, my brother and his wife have been married 3.5 years and have an 18-month-old daughter. My sister-in-law, Barb, is either very rude or passive-aggressive to our mother in emails and when she thinks no one is around. At Christmas, Barb sends out an email detailing what we are and are not allowed to buy for their daughter. If we can't do exactly what she wants, she threatens to cancel Christmas. This includes asking her permission before we buy any toys. Barb tells my mom that because her mother doesn't have much money, mom can't spend more than her mother does. So, because my family has a little more money, we are being punished. Barb is extremely demeaning and hurtful to us. I can't understand why my brother allows it. My husband and I are sick and tired of her acting this way, and the way she treats my mother is cruel. I'm tempted to confront her about how she has ruined Christmas for my parents. She basically doesn't allow us to have feelings, and I can't believe we are standing for it. Help. Signed, Holiday Hostage. Here's Abby's response. Dear Hostage, your sister-in-law may be telling your parents not to spend more money on gifts for the grandchild because she doesn't want her mother to be embarrassed. However, if her rude behavior extends beyond that, rather than take her on, the person you should confront about it is your brother. The next letter. Dear Abby, my fiancé and I are in the process of ordering our wedding invitations, and the phrase, quote, "the honor of your presence is requested," versus "the pleasure of your company is requested," is causing a problem. The woman at the store insists we use the latter because the ceremony won't be in a church. My research on the internet says if the ceremony is a religious one, the phrase "the honor of your presence" is appropriate, and it is also our preference. However, if the ceremony is a civil one, the pleasure of your company is requested, is the preferred one. Our minister will be performing the ceremony in the gazebo at the country club. Although it's not a church, the ceremony will certainly be religious. What's the proper etiquette on this issue? Invitations are on hold until I hear from you. Signed, Donna in Florida. Dear Donna, the salesperson at the store is mistaken. The wording on your wedding invitation is not determined by whether you are being married in a church. I ran your letter by Lisa Grotz, a San Francisco Bay Area certified etiquette expert, who had this to say, quote, "The wording of wedding invitations varies depending upon who is hosting the wedding, for example, the parents of the bride and groom. If the bride's parents are hosting, then the phrase, the honor of your presence, is correct. However, if you and your fiancé or other family members are hosting the wedding, then the more modern terminology, the pleasure of your company, is preferable." We'll turn now to Dr. Roach's column. Dear Dr. Roach, acetaminophen considered safe as well as effective. That's the headline. Here's the actual letter. Dear Dr. Roach, you recently wrote an article on the risk of heart disease with aspirin and anti-inflammatory drugs. What about acetaminophen, Tylenol? I've been taking this for many years of pain following spinal surgeries. Here's his answer. There have been some studies that have shown a mild increase in risk of heart disease among chronic heavy users of acetaminophen. However, most of the data have shown that among people who use it every other day or less, on average, if there is a risk, it probably is small. Heavy users of anti-inflammatory medicines, such as naproxen, probably are at a higher than average risk for heart disease as well. Acetaminophen is considered to be one of the safest medications for pain relief, but all medicines have the potential for side effects. The next letter involves celiac treatment. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 67-year-old man in fairly good health, but I was diagnosed with celiac sprue over 10 years ago by a blood test. I maintain a gluten-free diet the best I can, but I'm sure occasionally I get some gluten. How close are we to a cure or some type of medicine that one can take to break down gluten? Are there different levels of gluten intolerance? I have eaten food containing gluten with no side effects. Here's his reply. Celiac disease, also known as celiac sprue or gluten-sensitive enteropathy, is an immune disorder triggered by gliadin, a component of gluten, which is found in wheat, rye, and barley, and in some other grains. The definitive treatment is meticulous, strict compliance with a completely gluten-free diet. As minuscule amounts, as little as 30 milligrams of gliadin, can trigger a reaction in the gut. This leads to the inability to absorb nutrients and possibly predisposes one to development of lymphoma and gastrointestinal cancer. However, you are right that some people are more tolerant than others and can tolerate amounts of gluten that would cause symptoms in others. Nonetheless, I recommend a strict gluten-free diet for people with celiac disease. A new medicine called lorazepam is being developed not to break down gliadin, but to reduce the body's response to gliadin. It is in late-stage clinical trials. Here are some announcements from the A3 column. A Decatur man is facing armed violence and drug charges after he allegedly fled from a police traffic stop early Sunday. The 29-year-old suspect allegedly abandoned his vehicle at 12:42 a.m. in the 700 block of North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and took off on foot and was chased down in the 900 block of North Morgan Street. Police say he dropped a loaded 40 caliber handgun as he fled, which was later recovered from bushes. They also claim he was carrying cannabis and illegal prescription drugs and was wanted on warrant for other offenses out of Sangamon County. Decatur Memorial Hospital Medical Equipment, 3122 Brentwood Circle, will host a bra-fitting open house from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, November 2nd. Bra fitters and certified mastectomy fitters will be available. Bras and mastectomy bras will be available for purchase. Appointments are preferred but are not required. Refreshments will be provided. To make an appointment or for more information, call 876-4040. State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican from Forsyth, will host a neighborhood meeting from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, November 3rd, at the Macon County Farm Bureau, 1150 West Pershing Road. Anyone with questions regarding state government is encouraged to attend. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the November 1st issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.